Welcome to our meeting. It's 9 a.m. on February 4th, 2025, and time to convene a regular meeting of Snohomish County TV Board of Commissioners. I'm Sid Logan, President of the Commission. Joining me today are Commissioner Tony Olson, Vice President, Commissioner Julieta Altamirano Crosby, Secretary, John Harlow, our CEO, Colin Wollenbrock, Chief Legal Officer, Allison Morrison, Clerk of the Board, Jenny Rich, Deputy Clerk of the Board, and Morgan Stolzman, Deputy Clerk of the Board. Please neither turn off your cell phones or electronic devices at this time. At this time, I'm going to say the flag salute, and you're welcome to join me if you like. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Topics of the agenda are located on the deputy clerk's committee to the entrance. Are there any items to be added or changes to be made to the published agenda?
Yes. An addition to the public or change to the agenda. Item 3A.2, add places, amended page 6 of the 20. Could you please help me with this? What's this additional number here?
January 21st,
2025. Thank you. Regular final minutes. Is that correct?
Yes, thank you. Okay. Comments from the public is item 2 on today's agenda, and that's when the board will hear comments for items that are not listed on today's agenda. Comments will be limited to 5 minutes, and persons should be recognized to speak on the sign-up cards located on the deputy clerk's table near the entrance. If joining by Zoom, click raise hand or dial *9 by phone. I will call on you to speak at the appropriate time. When you are called upon and on a phone, dial *6 to unmute. This meeting is being recorded. When addressing the board during the meeting, please step up to the podium, use the microphone, state and spell your name, and indicate where you are from. Please remain at the podium while you speak and address the commissioners, not the audience. If you have documents or the materials to enter into the record, please hand them to the deputy clerk. We'll distribute them to the board. We appreciate your cooperation with our procedures. Please note that all motions are given an automatic silent second from the board. This ensures that all issues will be brought to the floor for discussion. So first up, agenda item 1, recognitions. We have our employee of the month for February, Brian Parsby. We have Jesse Pittis. Sorry, Jesse.
That's all right.
Introduce Brian.
What's Brian?
We know Brian, but yeah.
This is Brian right here.
Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and the board of trustees. My name is Jesse Pittis. I'm the superintendent of Generation Operations. I started that job in February. 4 years before that, I had the pleasure for working for Mr. Parsley. He's the reason I work here, probably. He was one of the folks who interviewed me, and I had met him before that. I worked at Hancock Calligan as an electrician, and Brian was out there helping the contractors move that job along. And I saw that group of workers and was like, I want to follow those guys. And here I am. So
we like to hear that.
All right. So here's a little speech. I might have had a ChatGPT helped me out a little bit. I'm sure I'm not the first person to say that, but today we gather to recognize a truly exceptional individual, Brian Parsley, who's being honored as our Employee of the Month. As Brian's superintendent, I am deeply privileged to share with you the remarkable journey that has led him to his well-deserved recognition. Brian's career at the Public Utility District began November 1st, 2004, when he joined as a garage helper. Over the past 2 decades, Brian continuously demonstrated his dedication, adaptability, and expertise in the field. Each role he has undertaken has been met with unwavering commitment and professionalism. Brian's journey of growth and excellence is a testament of his work ethic. On May 16, 2008, he was promoted to a maintenance helper 1, and shortly thereafter, on April 1st, 2009, he transitioned to Jackson Hydro. His relentless pursuit of excellence did not stop there. On December 1st, 2009, Brian took on the role of the hydro construction trainee, showcasing his eagerness to learn and grow. Brian's hard work and dedication paid off as he was promoted to hydroelectric constructor on December 1st, 2013, and further to Generation Constructor May 16, 2014. From December 1st, 2017 to July 1st, 2022, Brian temporarily served as the interim Generation Superintendent. This was marked by a harrowing incident involving Barry Krishman, who was the previous superintendent at Jackson during a shutdown, which is a large, complicated undertaking that we do from time to time out at Jackson. Barry's vehicle, work vehicle, was struck by a tree and he barely escaped with his life. So Brian immediately had to step up into that superintendent role, which he held until 2022. And after voluntarily ending his temporary assignment, Brian returned to his position as Generation Constructor, a role he continues to excel in today. And I will mention he's also interviewing to be the permanent foreman out there this week. So continuing that process. He's no stranger to recognition. He has been part of the team of the month on multiple occasions in July of 2024 this year and November 2018 for that Hancock Creek, Calumny Creek project that I told you he went down and helped with. What sets Brian apart is not just his exceptional job performance, but it's also his outstanding service to others and his community and his family. He consistently goes above and beyond his normal job duties, taking on additional responsibilities and ensuring the well-being of both his colleagues and customers. Brian's innovation and commitment to continuous improvement have led to enhancements in our service and operations. Brian's personal qualities further enhance his professional achievements. He embodies positive attitude, integrity, loyalty, initiative, and strong work ethic. His communication skills and motivation inspire those around him. It's no exaggeration to say that Brian is a cornerstone of our team and our community. I know that Brian is a local boy. He's, you know, he knows Sultan very well, and he has the utmost pride for Jackson and the PUD, and it rubs off on the folks around him. I have watched the crew. We have a lot of new crew members, and their willingness to follow him, all of his pride and all of the hard work that he has, it just rubs off on him. And it's rubbed off on me. I had the pleasure of working for Brian. And like I said, I truly don't think I'd be working here if it wasn't for his example. And I'm his boss now, but I look up to him and I always will. So yeah, thanks, Brian. And thank you, April, for making it all possible. So. In closing, I want to extend my heartfelt congratulations to Brian Parsley. This recognition as Employee of the Month is truly a reflection of your hard work, dedication, and the positive impact you have on all of us here at the PUD. Thanks, Bob.
The boss.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. You can stand right there. You want to go first?
Well, I'll never shut up. Well, so why don't you go?
We got all day.
Well, first of all, Brian, I'm really impressed with your drive to advance yourself and kind of going in different areas. It takes a lot of guts, and I'm really impressed with that. And also from your Jesse. Introduction and from what I read, the information about you, you really have got down pat the value of we in terms of working with your team, you know. The I attitude doesn't get it. And my last thing is you raised the gate, the intake gate. That's a huge job.
Yeah.
Wow. Can you give me like some stats? Stats around?
I first mean, all, I didn't, ways like. First thing, I didn't want to be any part of it because. it was a very interesting project we were faced with, and I don't know if you can really emphasize like the magnitude of what you're dealing with. I mean, how much does the thing weigh? 30,000 pounds. and it's 100 feet below you.
Yeah, I mean,
and
below. Yeah.
It's just dangling off these steel stems, and you got to pull it all the way up from the bottom of the reservoir.
Yeah,
and, yeah, it was an interesting task, but just a testament to the kind of people that are working here. I mean, we got excellent folks, and it doesn't matter what you throw at us. I mean, you got good support from our engineering staff and superintendent. So, I mean, you're not alone on these things. So.
Yeah. But when you say huge, when that was being constructed, and we go out there and watch that, I mean, that is huge. And what's the size of the tunnel that?
Our tunnel's 14 feet in diameter, and it's 4 miles long, and we've got four more miles of penstock. So, yeah, that gate, it retains our entire reservoir.
Well, congratulations to you and all the folks that worked on it.
Thank you.
Across the organization.
They're all sitting in here.
Sure.
Oh, well, sure.
Well, sure, I think you have something to present as well.
Oh, I didn't do my picture.
Oh, yeah.
Now, see, when you let me go first, I won't shut up.
You said that.
Oh, this is kind of cool. Like that.
Oh, that is a nice picture. Look at that. can we hang that up at home, babe? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You get it.
Well, and I have something to present as well. So congratulations on being selected for February 2025 Employee of the Month. And that's a...
$500? You guys really up to
date. I want to clarify, I didn't make that, okay?
You're going to have to Photoshop to get to the phone.
But thank you for your leadership. That speech was beautiful and really, really emphasized and everything what the work as a team. You know, as a leader, sometimes you go in the front, sometimes you go at the side, and sometimes you go in the back. So it's very nice how I can see the welcoming and how every single employee that works so hard here, and really it's a team effort. Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Well, Brian, I'm sure you have a trophy case at home. If you don't,
no, just the kids.
You can start one.
Thank you.
You know, it was fascinating reading what we had been provided, and not only the big heavy lift, but also the needle valve project, something else that hadn't been done before.
Yeah.
And thanks for taking that on. And
yeah,
thanks for being such a great leader. You've been before us before as part of a team. So you're a common thread to those.
Well, and it sounds like that, what we read was that it's in good shape.
Yeah.
It's been 30
years? 40
years.
40
years.
Yeah.
So as Employee of the Month, you get to have the microphone and say whatever you want. Now, I would caution you have an interview coming up. I want to think when you say something.
You know, I've had the time of my life working here. It's literally like just this the coolest job, and it's hard to explain what I get to do, you know, working up there at Jackson, but the people really make it what it is. And, you know, just as much of the work I, you know, just seeing their faces and getting to work side by side with them every day, almost spend more time with them than my family. And we just got, you know, just a solid relationship. And I guess I think they put in the article, but I got in your back no matter what. Call 3 a.m. I'd come help you out, but humbled by all the kind words, and I just appreciate it.
You have some family here if you want to introduce.
Take a picture, please.
Yeah, that's my beautiful wife, April. Come here. she nervous. She left. We live in Leavenworth. She had to get the kids on the bus at 7 o'clock, and she made it here just in time coming over the pass.
Wow. All that snow.
Glad to see her.
Can we get a picture?
It's Sam or all?
Oh, I don't. They can Photoshop us out.
I'm getting there.
You're immortalized.
Well, thank you for all you do.
Well, it's not mandatory to stay, but very welcome. Exciting agenda. Next is item two, comments from the public. Are there any comments from the public on items not on today's agenda? Please state your first and last names of the record. I'm not seeing any hand raised, and I'm not seeing any hands up online. Move on to item three, our consent agenda. 3A, approval of minutes of the regular meeting of January 21st, 2025. As amended. 3B, bid awards, professional service contracts and amendments. 3C, consideration of certification / ratification and approval of district checks and vouchers. I'll call for a motion. Are there comments from the public regarding the consent agenda? Please raise your hand. Seeing online or in the room. Commissioner, do you have any comments or questions about the consent agenda?
I don't have
any. Okay. I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried unanimously. Next, item four, updates for our media update. We have Aaron Sweeney here. Provide a media update. Good morning, Aaron.
Nobody knows how to clear a room like me.
Brought a cute child, but probably try to stay.
Yeah.
Right.
Definitely not that. Eric Sweeney, lead communications specialist for the media report. Let's jump right into it. So we sent out an email about a month ago, kind of encouraging customers to apply again for the HEAR program. We've got a lot of people in the queue, but we're going through them, and the need was felt that maybe we could use some more. So the Everett Herald actually picked that up as a story to kind of promote that. The Latino Herald picked it up, which was really nice. And then a number of other outlets pick it up, and WPA and Malthio Beacon. So it's nice to just get that out there. That program's doing really well. You know, Allison and Jeff are doing a great job running that program, putting it together. It's a lot of work, I know that. So we're just trying to get as much press on it as possible. A nice story in Linwood Times and Everett Herald talking about the swearing in of our new commissioner. Altamirano Crosby, so very nice, good stories. So just wanted to pinpoint those and get some public notion. And then an interesting story in the Herald talking about environmentalists and kind of all that's going on right now at the federal level. We got a number of nice shout outs just talking about how we have a really strong backbone of electric providing in this county from us, the PUD. So we were name checked by a few people, including me, Nancy Hirsch, the executive director of the Northwest Energy Coalition. So that was really nice to see. And then also our Herald column in January was on 10 easy ways to save energy and water. Just wanted to note that that's not the presentation. Publications, The Wire for February, just wanted to note this. We're really promoting our North County grand opening. Really want customers to come out, check out that new building. We've also got our Grow Paperless campaign. I have some numbers from our first month. So this is our campaign to really push customers to go paperless. We're working hand in hand with customer service, who's doing an amazing job really talking to customers as they call in, promoting the campaign. I think they got almost 1,900 customers to switch over. In total, we had 3,226 customers go paperless in January, which is a great offer. Yeah, so that's a concerted effort between not only our promo of this and the campaign and the contest. We're going to do a drawing here in a few days. But like I said, customer service doing a really fantastic job of that.
I have a question, sorry. So for the grand opening in Arlington, it's open for public? Because I received different message and phone calls, and that is open for everyone.
So yes, yeah, there'll
we
be
have the capacity for parking and everything.
Yes, there's some parking near the airport that we're going to use, I believe. But yeah, totally open to the public. There's going to be events for families and kids to come to, and then obviously the ribbon cutting will take place as well.
Okay, thank you.
They're probably squirrels.
Yeah, I'm sure Zip and Zap will make an appearance. Speaking of Zip and Zap, they actually graced the cover of the APPA Current e-newsletter last week, which was great. That's actually them invading John's office. and then speaking of John, John was on this nice ad by NWPPA. Krista's actually shot a short video with John, so that'll be for their 80th anniversary as well. So really nice. And then we have a feature in the upcoming Western Energy Institute's WE Magazine, their winter edition, on all the amazing work that we've done around income qualified assistance. So Missy Wilch and Jeff Feinberg have been instrumental in getting us that article.
Good talk, story to tell too.
That is all for me.
Any questions for her? Thank you,
Eric. Thank you.
Next, we have our legislative update. This is not the one where we have Ryan here to talk to us, but are there any questions about the report that's in the packet?
I don't have any, not a lot of little things.
I don't have any.
And I think, Kim, you had some comments you wanted to make.
Good morning. Kim Johnston, Chief Government Relations and Strategy Officer. I just wanted to take a quick 30 seconds. It's been a whirlwind of a couple of weeks at the federal level. President Trump has issued a slew of executive actions, both executive orders and memorandums that touch on a wide swath of policy. Some of those took effect immediately, while others, like new regulatory frameworks, are going to take months, actually years to implement. Just really quickly, executive actions taken by a president, those are largely tools that presidents use to shape policy. And they come in mostly two forms: executive orders, which are kind of statements from a president saying, this is the policy that I want my administration to embrace. And then there's executive memorandums, which are more instructions to the secretary, that the head of agencies, for how to implement and execute and enforce various laws. So we're seeing a slew of actions through both of those tools. It garnered a lot of attention, support, opposition, questions. And I guess my big message to you all right now is there are more unknowns than knowns at this stage in the game. I think that agencies are trying to figure out how to operate within the directives that the Trump administration has put forward through these memorandums and orders. And so I'm here to tell you, I'm monitoring this very closely. I don't have a lot of answers yet. We're seeing that some of these actions that are taken are being paused. Some of them are being delayed. Some of them the courts are taking action on. There are some limitations to what the president has the authority to do within executive orders. And we're seeing states challenge some of that, and that will play itself out in the courts. So I just want you all to have confidence that your government relations team is watching this closely, that we are trying our best to keep up and find the places that we may be impacted and understand how that looks. And when we have a better grasp on things, we'll come back and talk to you about that.
Question?
No, I only want to say thank you. That is a lot to digest, and it's shaking, right? It's like waiting to see what happens. So, but thank you.
There is a lot. We will, fingers crossed, have a new person on staff to handle, really spearhead our federal government relations by the end of the month, and that will help us keep up with the pace as well.
We need to get you one of those offices with multiple screens. You can watch all the networks at the same time. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, item 5, public hearing in action. 5A, consideration of a resolution amending the district's water service rates and charges for single family, multiple family, and commercial industrial customers for water utility service. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
Okay, I will now reconvene a public hearing. We have Christina Art here available to answer any questions and provide the prior notification if necessary. Well, first of all, any questions or comments from the public regarding the resolution? Please raise your hand. Not seeing any hands raised. Are there any questions or comments, Commissioner?
We've had some previous educational briefings on this, and last meeting the board had a pretty good discussion, so I don't have any further questions.
Any other questions? I'll close the public hearing and I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say no.
Aye.
I'm sure I didn't hear your response.
Yes, I said aye.
Okay, thank you. You probably spoke at the same time. Passes unanimously. Item 6, items for individual consideration. 6A, consideration of a resolution seeking reimbursement for certain electrical system capital expenditures through the issuance of revenue bonds. I will call for a motion.
I move approval.
Okay. Angela Johnson is available to answer any questions regarding the resolution. Are there any comments from the public regarding the resolution? Please raise your hand. Hands raised. Are there any questions or comments from you, commissioners, about the resolution?
During our budget hearings, this was discussed, and the amount that staff is proposing to go to the market is consistent with what was in the budget presented to.
I don't have it.
Okay. I will call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Motion carried unanimously. 6B, consideration of resolution revising the non-represented salary structure table and certain portions of the compensation program. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
Okay. Christy Schmidt is available virtually to answer any questions regarding the resolution. Are there any comments from the public regarding the resolution? Please raise your hand. Any hands up online or in the room? Commissioners, do you have any comments or questions?
Again, I went back to our budget deliberations, and the percent of increase in this resolution was consistent with what we in the hearings we received on the budget. So we discussed it previously. Yeah.
Okay. I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Motion carries unanimously. Next, commission business, 7A commission reports. Are there any reports, commissioners? With you, Commissioner Crosby.
Yes,
Governor Crosby, sir.
Thank you. Well, last week I had the privilege of visiting the Arlington Microgrid and Green Energy Center, and I want to express my gratitude to all the team that host us, and thank you to Sierra Club organization. That was very nice to see that. A lot to learn, a lot to digest, and it's open for everyone. They can reach out to them, and if they want to know about the clean energy and reliable energy, I mean, in the community is a good place to go. So I want to say thank you. And thank you to Allison, that she was there too.
Carlson, do you have any?
No.
I just have a couple. Last week, I accepted on behalf of the PUDO award from the Maryville Chamber for a member for 25 years. It's there in the box for safekeeping on Allison's desk. And while I was there, the Lakewood School Superintendent approached me and said how appreciative she was at the work we've been doing with them. I can't remember the employee's name. Is Aaron or Eric, perhaps? to help make the buildings more energy efficient. She's just said it was really outstanding and a great person to work with.
His name is Orion Eden.
Orion, okay. Thank you very much, Eden. So anyway, it was very nice to have her come out to seek me out to give you the good news. So that is what I have. Okay, next is 7B, our Commissioner Events Calendar. Wait a second. We have PPC and PNUC this week. And Economic Alliance, Stay in Olympia. The Greater Everett Chamber meeting, which I have intended. We both attended the first one. And then, of course, we have the APP legislative rally in DC at the end of the month. Are there any changes to be made to the events calendar, Commissioner?
No.
Okay. Well, next move to 7C, our December 2024 district dashboard. Are there any questions or comments about the dashboard, Commissioner?
I didn't have any this time.
I don't have any. Just a comment. It's awesome to see our OSHA recordable injuries drop so much. That's pretty good. I was thinking today that Brian was getting that board, you know, the inherent danger of moving something that hasn't been moved in many years, that we're 30 tons and it's being done for the first time. So if you know, to do it often, you don't have to do it safely. So I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Safety record in, or it's getting better.
Yeah, certainly great to see that the number of injuries and severity of the injuries trending in the right direction, but that it's those types of things, the work practices and the culture that is changing that is probably most impressive, and it's really folks closest to the action that are making that happen.
Yeah, it's, you know, and I haven't been to a new employee orientation in a while, but it's always interesting, you know, we meet people, flaggers and entry-level divisions and you know, them understanding they have stop work authority. That's really huge.
Yeah, that was, didn't you bring that in? I don't believe it existed before. Continue.
I think when I worked in the oil field, if I told someone to stop work, I probably would have been sent home. Okay, any other questions or comments, commissioners, on the district dashboard?
I have none.
Okay, let's move on to item 8, our governance planning calendar. Are there any changes to governance planning? A couple of things to be scheduled. On page 151 of the packet.
And March 18th, will this be consistent quarterly update on SnowSmart as we have done with Connecta? There's a briefing scheduled for the 18th of March.
Yes, it is.
We'll be receiving them quarterly.
Correctly. Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, next we'll move on to item 9, our CEO General Manager briefing session. This item is for the board and the CEO General Manager discussion among ourselves and with PUD staff. John Harlow, our CEO, will facilitate this discussion. Good morning, John.
Good morning, commissioners. We've got some good topics to go over today. First up is our energy assistance and income qualified weatherization. And Jeff Feinberg and possibly Missy Wilch.
Yes.
Good morning, Jeff.
Hey, good morning, John. Good morning, commissioners. My name is Jeff Feinberg, Senior Manager of Energy Services. And I am representing largely the work of Missy Wilch, who unfortunately is ill. She is online, but I will tell you, What she's dealing with makes it very difficult to speak. And so if she does raise her hand, it's because I've probably really misspoken and said something quite egregious and not in line at all with what's true. So, but Missy is here. She's listening. She's participating. I also want to call out that we also have on the call Kathleen Friend with us, and she is the administrative weatherization specialist at Snohomish County Weatherization, which is one of our key partners in this particular program. And so we're here this morning not to ask any particular action of the board or anything like that. In 2 weeks, we are asking for an amendment to our interlocal agreement that we currently have with Snohomish County. So because of that, we thought it's a great opportunity for us to kind of come and give you guys just a quick briefing and update on this program, some of the recent results of the program, what we're doing in it, let you interact and ask some questions about that, and then hear about why we're making the amendment that we are and asking for your approval in the next meeting. And what I'll say too is this also could not be done without the help of our legal team. They're really critical to all of this. Paul McMurray has been really important about reviewing this agreement and making sure that the language is the exact language we need. And so just want to make sure we call that out as well. And so with that, let's just jump right in here. And again, we're all missing out because Missy's not here. I think if you guys know Missy, it's killing her that she's not in the room and she's not the one getting to talk about this. But don't worry, Missy and I'll be back in March and we'll bring that same energy. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about looking backwards and then looking forward at what we're trying to do. So income qualified weatherization at Snohomish County, this is actually a federal program. The weatherization program is one that's been in place, I believe, since the Johnson administration. So a really long time, a longstanding program. And what happens is the federal government funnels funds for weatherization to the states, and then the state uses demographics and different things to send those funds to different community action partners kind of throughout the state. And so those funding levels are completely set by the state. But historically, what we've done at Snohomish County PUD, in the past, we participated with a state program called Matchmaker, where we would then send in-kind funds to the state of Department of Commerce, and then they would sort of distribute those also to Snohomish County Weatherization. However, back in 2019, 2018, we made the decision, instead of kind of sending the money to Commerce, we would actually send it directly to Snohomish County Weatherization. And so we entered into an agreement where now we've got this direct kind of, organization to organization partnership and kind of cut out that state, not because we don't like the state, right? But it gave us a little bit more of a direct relationship and just a little bit more flexibility and autonomy in how we send those funds and how quickly they can get to our customers. And so that's kind of how we've been administering the program. And so really what we're going to be talking about today and what we're hoping to add to the amendment of our interlocal is just continued more flexibility and empowerment at the program level to make changes and be nimble as we need to be when there are changes. So there's the piece where we changed to that direct relationship in 2019. And then as you guys will recall, we also had the Clean Energy Transformation Act that happened in 2019. And while this law largely is focused on the decarbonization of fuel in Washington state, it also has key components for energy assistance work. And one of those things that we have to do as a part of this law is we get to determine how many of our customers are at or below 80% of area median income and have an energy burden of greater than 7%. So in other words, 7% of their household income is going towards their energy bills. And so we have an obligation under this law to understand what does it cost the utility if we were to offer them the right kind of assistance to help them get their energy burden to a manageable level. And we have to continually make progress towards reaching all of those customers and assisting them in that. And so though we've had this program and we've had our discount program and we've had some other assistance programs for years and years, it was 2019 and 2020 where it became, this is no longer nice to have, but this is something that we need to be assessing. How are we optimizing these programs? How effective are they at meeting these different outcomes? And then we get to report on them every couple of years. And again, that's not what we're doing today. We'll talk more about that in March. But we just want to share that because this program becomes increasingly important. Because one of the things that's really unique about this program amongst our other energy efficiency or energy assistance programs, there's no other program where we can really treat the whole home of a vulnerable customer or someone who is income qualified like this program allows us to. Through this program, we can do not only HVAC measures, we can do windows, we can do insulation, we can do kind of a full complement and menu of services that might be the right fit. And as we're learning and continue to learn and continue to assess the effectiveness of our programs, it's critically important for us to have this kind of full toolbox of programs, things that aren't just billing assistance and things that aren't just energy efficiency, but ways to kind of thread that work together. And this program is one of those really key partnerships. It's especially valuable because we get to co-fund it along with Snohomish County, and it's not just completely upon us or completely upon them. So, next slide. Here's just some of the results of the last couple of years. So in 2023, we were able to serve 55 households, and the average kilowatt hour savings per unit was $2,684. Now, what's really important here, and I want to call out, is we can look at those numbers. And by the way, that's a profoundly large number in and of itself. However, those are first-year savings, and a lot of the measures that are going in these homes will last 12, sometimes 30, 40 years when we're talking about windows and insulation. And so we claim first-year savings. That's how the metrics are done at the state level and with BPA. But it's really, really important to know that there's a lot of enduring investment. And so, I mean, one of the things that we always want to stress anytime we're here talking about the work of our department is it's not a spend, but it really is an investment, right? And we talk about our annual budget and we talk about our annual and biennial goals and those types of things. But anytime we're doing this work for well into the decades. And so that's just really important to note that. And so again, in 23, we served 55 households. We had these big gaudy kilowatt hour numbers, but I think the most meaningful stuff is how many households were served, how many lives are different, how many, you know, families in our community are having, you know, warmer homes in the winter and that sort of thing because of this program. And so in 24, we served 36 households. And also, Allison, if you see Missy's hand go up at any point, will you let me know?
Yeah.
Cool. And so we just kind of wanted to share some of these details with you about just how effective and how powerful this program is. And so essentially what we're asking to do in the amendment that's going to come before you in 2 weeks is we're wanting to add language to that that now actually would empower Missy or the program manager of our energy assistance program and our partners at the county, Kathleen and her colleagues, to be able to make program changes and decisions about measures and incentives through mutual agreement together at any point throughout the program year. As you guys know, in April and October of every year, Bonneville changes their implementation manual, which tells us what measures are reimbursable, what measures are cost effective, and they also adjust the savings numbers for those measures. And so that is something that we know happens every 6 months, but sometimes that even happens within those periods. And we wanted to make sure that our program was nimble and flexible so that if we find measures that might be meaningful for customers, because as you guys know, throughout Snohomish County, we have all kinds of different housing stock. We have all kinds of different things that once we get in a home and we audit it, we may see that we haven't seen before, and there might actually be a measure for that. And so we wanted to make sure that Missy and the county have the ability in those instances to make decisions their mutual agreement, and then to build those things into the program so that we can more effectively serve our customers. And so that's our ask. Again, nothing's needed from you today.
Sorry, I have a question.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, please.
Could you go back to the...
Yes.
So I'm just curious. I wasn't here, but
yeah.
I see that in 2023, you mentioned that you serve, or we serve 55 households. So how do you target those households, and do you have any segregated data about those households? If we can see, I mean, it's random, or how to receive that funds?
Yeah, so the county does all of the intake for this. So essentially this is their program because they have the federal guidelines that they have to follow. So they do the customer intake. Those customers come to them through a variety of ways. There's referrals from some different organizations and agencies in the county. Some are actually through the county's LIHEAP program, which is our energy assistance, which is another federal program that does direct billing assistance. Some of them get referred to from us wherever customers calling and we realize they're a distressed customer and they may have opportunity. So they go through the county's process. The county does all the income verification. They actually have auditors within their staff that will then go out and they'll assess the home and see what might need to be done. And then once they're approved, they basically send the project to us and then we approve certain measures that we want to co-fund with the county and then we interact with it that way. So it really is kind of this, primarily it's their program according to their guidelines, and then we are kind of the partner that's adjacent, that co-fund with them, that, you know, see what other measures may be above and beyond we might be able to perform together. So that's how those are determined. But we can certainly give you more in-depth detail about where were these 55 homes located, and you know, what are the different aging stocks of the
I'm
hospital?
I'm curious to see that. I mean, but yeah, that's fine. But I'm just curious, and looks like the 2024. I mean, they served 36 households, and that's like, wow, that was more more money there. So I'm curious to see why there's less households serving in 2024 than 2023, and there's more money in there. So anyways, I'm not criticized, but that's I'm new here, and I'm just curious to see what you've done, and it's amazing. So.
Well, and I mean, when we get to talk about the total program portfolio that we're talking about across all of our energy efficiency programs, one of the consistent themes that is sad but true is rising costs. And so some of the same measures that were done year over year for certain fixed costs, they've gone up. Not only that, but there's also challenges with workforce and registered contractors and things like that that can perform that work. And so in some regards, that's partly why you see maybe less homes served but more funding. And then also, none of these homes are the same. There is no cookie cutter approach for even things like sizing a heat pump and things like that. And so there is a little bit of fluctuation and variability year over year. But I'll say across the board, I mean, when I started in energy services 5 years ago, and we looked at our entire residential, commercial, and industrial energy efficiency, at a portfolio level, we were seeing around 15 to 17 cents per kilowatt hour when it came to paying for savings and incentives. Now we're pretty consistently around 21, 23 cents a kilowatt hour every year at the portfolio level. So that's including all our larger, really affordable programs. And so this is definitely not our most affordable program, but it's critically important, and we realize that.
I know, and I'm aware too that we cannot generalize and put in the same path, I mean, to all the families, even though they have maybe perhaps the same income, but they have the size of family and everything, how it impacts. So yes, everyone is unique.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Hand was rising.
Is there a request for additional information to ask Jeff to go back to the county and get that demographic information?
Is that public? Some of that public record?
Sure.
It's all public record.
Sure,
it's all
public. Yeah, I'm fine with that.
No, I'm fine.
Okay.
Yes.
The raw information is information, but I think there's a lot behind it. So, and interesting, you talked about increasing prices.
Yes.
That's a big line, Bob, and that's not going to go away.
No, especially as we look at residential work. A lot of our commercial and industrial opportunity when it comes to energy efficiency, which again is not what I'm talking about, but we will be in March when we're back. We still see some very low cost opportunity with residential work. I mean, we're primarily looking now at things like water heating and HVAC measures, which again are far more expensive than things like lighting, things like that, that we've had an abundance of opportunity for in the past.
Well, and we knew that once you got beyond the low-hanging fruit, I like to call it, it is more expensive.
Jeff, do we send customers to this program?
We do. We do. Yes. Yeah, we were definitely one of the referrals of how customers get to the program.
Thank you.
All right.
Now, are we clear about what our expectation is? I don't want staff to spend a lot of time. I'm assuming this information is pretty.
Neither do I. I mean, if you have that, that's okay.
Yeah,
and if not, that's fine too. I'm not one that you put effort and time. That's, you can do something more important than this, right? I mean, and utilize your time. I mean,
we'll follow up.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not gonna lie. We love digging into this stuff. So it is.
Well, that's not a question I would have. Would have asked, and so, but don't get too carried away.
It sounds like the request is to get what we can reasonably get from the county for demographic information so we can understand better.
They're good.
We'll come back. So, the captain team will come back with additional information. We're good.
And also, I know that I have to do a lot of homework in order to learn and being in the same pace that you guys. I mean, I'm the new here, and I know what you stop
for me to have all these questions. I mean, that's not fair for you too as well. So,
well, actually, this is good. I mean, the information, the background, what leads to the high level or higher level information that Jeff is providing is good education for everyone. So,
and this is exactly why we wanted to present in this format this morning and then actually have the consent agenda item in 2 weeks. So we want it to be this give and take. And I'll say, John Hoffman has us coming back to share about our energy efficiency portfolio results for 24 and our energy assistance portfolio results for 24 at the second meeting in March. And we'll bring data. So we'll probably try to be careful about how much we bring. But that's really kind of the future of our work, in all honesty, is looking at not only who are we serving and what do we really know well about them, but who are we not serving yet and how do we get there and how do we build the right kind of programming and, you know, micro programs to get there. And so we'll be sharing a little bit more about that too.
And honestly, I think, and I'm not to speak on behalf of Jeff, but we like the questions, because that gives Jeff and team the opportunity to now come back and really kind of show all the work that they do in this space, which is, it's a tremendous amount.
Well, yeah. And these are, this is a pretty incredible task, and I think it's going to get more challenging as the cost of living goes up, or counties are getting more expensive to live in, and energy costs are going up. And so, we're going to have more and more customers that are challenged to use our services.
I agree. And I also think that we're well suited for the task, and it's really exciting. You know, like I feel like I have the coolest job because I'm the hype man for the band, right? Like our band's really good though. Like never get named. So like I feel like it's just my job to be like, I mean, just like, you know, your experience with hearing about the work that Ryan's done helping the Lakewood School District pursue those grants. I mean, I think this team loves these kind of complex challenges and how to like tackle them. And so it's really fun. And then our partnership with the county, I don't know, Kathleen, I don't want to put you on the spot if you wanted to share something, but I'll just say her relationship and Missy's relationship and just the creative way they're doing the work together now, that's really threaded and kind of that consistent communication to make sure we're being as effective as we can for customers. It's just really fun, really, really beautiful to watch.
Any questions? Okay. No. Well, Jeff, if Missy was here, what do you think she would have wanted you to say that you didn't say? What is she excited about?
She did have her hand up. She had her hand up whenever we were talking about, can we get more data about those houses? So I have a feeling she's got some things she'd like to share in detail, but we'll put that together.
Okay.
My friend has her hand up.
Oh, yeah. And it sounds like Kathleen does have her hand up.
Yes. All right.
If that's okay.
Yeah. Please, Kathleen, please unmute yourself.
Good morning.
Morning.
Jeff, you opened the door when you said you didn't know if I had anything to say. You shouldn't have done that. I just wanted to say that over the last several months, the partnership between Snohomish County Weatherization and PUD's low-income services has really been a transparent collaboration in serving homes. And I just really appreciate the support that we're able to give each other. And so anything you need from me, as far as data, please feel free to reach out. And thank you.
Thank you, Kathleen. Thanks for being such a great partner. Welcome, hope Missy gets well. Hope you get well soon, Missy. Thank you.
Excellent job, Jeff. All right, next up.
So entertaining.
Huh?
He's always.
I know. He's phenomenal. Awesome. I get excited.
I look forward to his presentation.
Sorry, guys. I hope this isn't a letdown. It's kind of
awkward.
Usually,
it would help. So I'm Maureen Barnes. I'm the manager of real estate services, and I'm here to talk about a potential property purchase in Stanwood for the water utility. So this presentation is just pretty much to inform the board of a proposed fee purchase of approximately 5 acres located at 8505 172nd Street Northwest in Stanwood/Warm Beach area.
I want to outline the primary terms of the transaction and also to let you know that this transaction will be back before the commission for approval by resolution at the February 18th commission meeting. We'll jump right into the background. In 2018, commission passed resolution number 5862, which authorized the transfer of ownership of the Warm Beach Water Association water system to the district. As part of the transaction, of course, the district also acquired all of the easements, land, and the equipment that had been with the Warm Beach Water Association. This also included an easement where the Warm Beach Water Treatment Plant and well number 4 is located. And that is directly, to the east of the property that we're looking to purchase. This leaves the district with no ability to expand or add additional facilities at the current site. No additional facilities, treatment, storage, or source protection. And if you see here, this is the actual water treatment plant and the reservoir. The 4.81, the approximate 5 acres, is there on right up ahead, on the west over to the east is a small residence, and it shows exactly where the well and treatment plant is located, which is on approximately, the whole parcel is about 2.5 acres. There's the manufactured home, and then there's about an acre that goes with the easement for the facilities. So the need for the property acquisition. Well, number 4 is the primary water source for the Warm Beach community. Any sort of potential development next to that well site could have negative impacts on the well and the aquifer. Additionally, the ownership is going to allow for source protection and potential future expansion of the existing facilities should a reservoir, additional treatment, or filtration be required. If the property were to be sold and developed, obviously then an acquisition for future expansion would be very difficult, if not we would be unable to. So talking about the actual property, which this is a picture of, a purchase and sale agreement was entered into on November 25th of 2024, which was subject to commission approval. We did have an appraisal done on the property, which it supports the purchase price of $295,000. In fact, it actually came in at $300,000. We had environmental affairs conduct a review of the site, and there are no known concerns regarding environmental liability. Nothing's ever been built or this property has not been used. Our next steps, as I said before, we'll be coming back February 18th. We'll return asking for approval via resolution and allow us to go ahead and complete the sale. All the documents have been approved by the legal department. Water utility and real estate staff highly recommend that the district complete the purchase of the property. And any questions?
Any questions for
you? No. Is it one owner then?
Yes.
That you're dealing with? Okay.
Yes.
It's like a smart acquisition.
I think so too. And luckily the water department was the one, the water utility noticed it, brought it to us, and we pretty much jumped on it. All right, thank you.
Thank you, Maureen. Any interest in a quick break?
Sure, let's take a short break and come back at 5:10.
Oh, you're welcome, gosh.
All right, 10:05, and we are back. What do you have next for us, John? What exciting thing do you have next for us?
I'm going to kick it to Colin and let him introduce the exciting next presentation.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioners. Colin Willenbrock, Chief Legal Officer. So it is my privilege to introduce a member of our team, Sarah DiVittorio. She has been in the public sector for over 20 years. She is the state-renowned expert on public records, served with Snohomish County Deputy Prosecutor's Office, also served with the Washington State Attorney General's Office, and we are very privileged to have her. She manages all of our public records here at the district. She is our designated public records officer, and she is here to give your required annual training on public records and the Open Public Meetings Act. So with that, I'll welcome Sarah.
And welcome.
Thank
now
you.
that I've offended you.
It's all right. I'm going to be the hype woman for open government. You'll notice I cleared the room pretty effectively. This is not an exciting topic, but I do my best to keep you guys entertained and informed. If you have questions at any point, please feel free to stop me, jump in. It's supposed to be interactive. If we didn't want it to be interactive, I would make you sit and watch the videos, but that's just not fun. You get me. So you're required to do training on records retention, the Public Records Act, and the Open Public Meetings Act. This training meets those requirements. However, if you want to refresh your knowledge on the topics at any time, we do have trainings in Learning Central that cover records retention and the Public Records Act. This is the only OPMA training, Open Public Meetings Act training. So enjoy it and soak it up. We're going to start with records management. So the first question that we ask ourselves whenever we're talking about records management is, what exactly is a public record? The definition is very, very broad here in the state of Washington. It is any writing that has information relating to either the conduct of government or the performance of a governmental or proprietary function. And then it's any record that is prepared, owned, used, or retained by the district. So it's important, and you'll see the underlinings there, the prepared, owned, used, or retained. We have a lot of public records that we don't physically possess here at the district. Those would be records that our contractors create in the course of completing contracts for the district that they may never give to us, that we may never touch, we may never see, but the contractor uses them in the course of fulfilling their contractual obligations. So those records are considered our public records. So if we get a public records request and it asks for all records related to a particular project, I have to go to the contractor and ask the contractor to provide everything that they had or used or generated in the course of doing their contractual duties. So it is really, really broad here in Washington. We have one of the broadest and strictest penalty schemes for public records in the country. There's two questions that you ask yourself for any public record. And the first is, do I have to retain it? And I know that a question was presented by Commissioner Logan yesterday to me to address, what records exactly do you all have to retain? Your have to retain is quite small. You need to retain records that are unique to you that aren't contained anywhere else in the district. For example, Commissioner, if you receive an email from a constituent that is directed to you and only to you through your public disclosure, I mean, through your commission email address, that's a record that you're responsible for retaining, which means that you have control over the deletion of it or not. So you would need to not delete that record. Conversely, if that same email came in and Allison was CC'd as the clerk of the board, then Allison will have a copy of it and she'll maintain it. So it's the records that are unique to you. The other examples that were popped up to me as potential are records relating to the CEO's performance evaluation. Those records are not yours. Those should all be given to HR during the course of your duties in his evaluation. You shouldn't be keeping those yourselves. So they have to retain quite small. But then we move on to that second question, which is, do I want to retain it? Now, you all retain records every day that you don't have an obligation to retain, but you've chosen to retain, whether purposely or not, but you've chosen to retain them. So examples of those are, if you're taking notes here today, those are records you don't have to, you don't have to create those records in the first place, but you don't have to retain them. But if you choose to retain them, then there are public records and records management obligations related to those records. Another example would be if you do not maintain a regimen of deleting emails in your email account for the district, those are records that you're choosing to retain. And that's fine. If that helps you do your job, that's wonderful. Keep doing it. But you need to be cognizant of the consequences of the decision to keep something that you're not required to keep. So that's what we're going to talk about here.
I have a question.
Yes.
Exactly the example that you shared about the if I receive an email only direct to me with no CC anybody, is exactly what happened. And I don't know what to do with that, because when I work as a city council, we respond to that person. And here I didn't respond because it's like the protocol is different. And so I retained that email, but I guess I have to forward to Allison, right, in order to work or give the answer to that person, the email to me.
So that's a conversation I would suggest that you have with the clerk's office. But from my perspective as legal counsel for the district, that sounds like a good idea to go ahead and, even if you're not going to respond to it, to forward it on to the clerk's office so that we're sure that we're maintaining a copy of that in accordance with the record retention requirements. Alternatively, if you are going to respond, you can simply CC the clerk in your response.
Okay, thank you.
Let me just confirm real quick.
Could you clarify that?
Are these coming to your personal email, or is this the one that comes to email Julieta?
No, it's not my personal, it's that commissioner.
Yeah, we if it's the outside external one, those are the ones that we handle. Even if it comes directly to you, we do respond to those, and we can have a further conversation about that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
And part of the background on that is so that all commissioners get the same information.
Okay, so it sounds like you can work with Allison on that.
Yeah, I guess I'm surprised. I didn't realize that any email that we got sent, we had to retain. I understand if we have the email and we have a public record request, mm-hmm. we produce those records. But so a customer emails me and just me, and I always send those on. But
as long as you send them on,
what's the retention schedule?
If it's a communication from a member of the public to you in your official capacity, I'm not talking about junk mail, but I'm talking about a correspondence from a constituent, the retention for that is 2 years.
We retain it, or it's the clerk's responsibility.
If you don't do anything with it and the clerk's office never sees it, you keep it for 2 years. If the clerk's office has a copy of it, has access to it, then you don't need to worry about it.
Okay.
We try and simplify it as much as possible for you guys because we don't want you to get bogged down in the records management process here at the district because it's quite overwhelming sometimes. So we give that all to the clerk's office, which is why they're so wonderful. And look how happy she looks. She's got that big old smile. Okay, so some basics. There are two different main types of public records. The first are records that deal with the conduct of business. So that's the email from a constituent. It's dealing with the conduct of your business as a commissioner. And the other type of communications or records are called transitory records. We're going to talk a lot about transitory records because those are the ones that I would like to see you actively make an effort to get rid of in your email box, to actually delete them. And the reason why I say that is because when we receive a public records request that says, I want all communications to PUD commissioners, I don't want to have 75 emails from APPA that you're not obligated to keep sitting in your email box because then I have to process that. And I don't mind so much the processing of them, but if an error is made, it's a strict liability statute, which means we have to pay a penalty. And I'll get into that more when we get to the public records portion of the presentation. So we are obligated to maintain records in their native formats, regardless if it's one you have to retain or you choose to retain. So what that means is, I'm going to keep using that email example. So if you receive an email from a constituent addressed solely to you and you go, this is one I have to keep, I'm going to keep it because I'm required to keep it, you have to keep it as an email file. It's not acceptable to print it off and put a hard copy somewhere and delete the electronic version. It's not acceptable to convert it to a PDF and delete the email. You have to keep it in the email format because that's the native format of the document. Now, if it's a record that you choose to retain, so say it's one addressed to you, Commissioner Logan, that's also CC'd to Allison, and you've made the choice to keep it, again, that's fine, but you're obligated to retain it in that email format because it's the native format. So briefly, I'm going to talk native formats very, very briefly. So it's essentially the format it was created. So an email that's created like an email or received as an email needs to be kept as an email. A Word document is a weird one because we almost never create documents in Word and they live in Word. Usually what we're doing in Word is we're creating something that we ultimately print out and we sign. So a memorandum, an opinion of some sort, a letter, any of those things, the Word document is not the actual final completed record. It's the thing that was signed. And once it's signed, that's the document that has retention. So the completed document. PDFs can sometimes substitute for paper files. So you'll hear, if you run in the records management circles like I do, PDFs, there's this concept called scan and toss. The state archives allows us to scan in some paper records and toss the originals. But that's governed by our district information governance department. So DIG is the one that authorizes the destruction of records in that manner. And then paper files, right? So if you have something on paper, the notes that you write here today, those need to be maintained as paper if they're kept. But again, those are ones that are not required to be kept.
Can you say that again? The last sentence.
Paper files. So the notes that you're writing here today, if you're going to keep them, they need to be kept in paper format. If you keep them, you do not have to keep them. The notes that you take as an individual here today are not records that are subject to retention.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm. So the basic rules for records retention, first is that the format of the record determines how you keep it. So that native format concept we've been talking about. And then the content of the record itself determines how long it's kept. So for example, if it's an email from APPA announcing their next conference, that is a transitory record, has no value because the content has no value. It can be deleted. If it's an officially adopted directive, so one copy of all directives that we've ever adopted as a district must be maintained. And they have a permanent retention, which means that once we're done with them here, we forward them onto the Secretary of State's office and they're kept at the State Archives. So let's talk of those transitory records, because those are the ones that I want you to think about and think about getting rid of. So they can be created by or received by the district. They're typically of short-term or temporary use. They can be deleted or destroyed as soon as you don't need them anymore. But for you all, when you have a question in your mind, I want you to keep the record. So if you ever look at something that's on your desk and you go, I'm not sure, is this one that Sarah told me was transitory or not? Just keep it. Make our lives easier and keep it, because you never want to be the commissioner who destroys a public record that needed to be maintained.
Having said that, I can't really think of any other record that we'd be the sole bearer of other than an email.
Correct. You're correct.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So hopefully you would never be asking yourself that question. But have you ever gotten to a scenario where you did ask that question?
I haven't asked myself that question.
That's okay.
But now I'm asking myself the question about the emails.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so examples of transitory records, the agency-generated forms and publications, things that we come up with here, brainstorming, collaborating records. So if you're sitting in a meeting, taking notes as a group, those don't need to be maintained. Contact information records. I'm going to do a quick note to the clerk to double check that their email accounts don't have the RSS feeds turned on. And if they are turned on, talk to me so we can get them turned off. Drafting and editing. So the various versions of documents that you come up with. So this one is a big issue because there's a disconnect between records retention and the Public Records Act. So the Public Records Act has an exemption for particular drafts of documents. And then we have in the records retention law, there's not a requirement to keep drafts. So I think, having done this for the last 20 years, and make me feel old, Colin, having done this for the last 20 years, a lot of agencies rely on that exemption in thinking, oh, I don't need to get rid of the draft, because if I have a draft, it's just going to be exempt from public records. Well, that exemption has very, very specific defined application. It doesn't apply to the majority of drafts that we generate as a district. In addition to that, even if it is a draft that is exempt at some point, once we have made a final policy decision, the drafts are no longer exempt. So the better practice is to not maintain the drafts. Once the draft is no longer useful, we've moved on to the next version of the document, the next draft, we don't need to be retaining the original one. And that makes the job at the end a lot easier. It also reduces a lot of confusion. There have been multiple times where I have been asked by a department here at the district, well, you're making me turn over a draft, but we suspect there's going to be a lot of change before we get this to the final product. And we're concerned that this draft going out is going to confuse the public. It's a valid concern. In those situations, we take particular steps to make that clear to the requester that this isn't the final document. But if we didn't have, you know, seven versions of that document already, it would make the information a lot easier and clearer. Okay, the next is electronic documents used to create signed paper records. That's what I was saying about Word documents. Like if you print out a letter and sign it, you don't need to keep the electronic Word version. internet browsing on individual computers. Do note that we don't keep internet browsing history on individual computers. Oh, Christy's no longer here. But our firewall, that crowd really thinned out. Internet browsing on individual computers is not maintained, but our firewalls do track every single internet site that is hit on any computer owned by the district. And it's disturbing how much information is gathered by those firewalls. To-do lists, tasks, routing slips, notes, you know, your sticky notes that you put on stuff that you need to keep that. Records documented as part of more formalized records. So that's a prime example of that is when we get a call into customer service from a customer and the customer service representative handles the issue of the call and then makes a note in our tracking system about when the call happened, who it was, what the issue was, and how it was resolved. We don't need to keep the recording of that phone call anymore. We might choose to, but we're not legally obligated to. Reference materials, you'll see a reference again to RSS feeds. You don't need to worry about it. I'll work with Allison on that. And then request for basic information. Junk mail I talked about.
Can you go back to that one?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if we an email as a request for basic information,
mm-hmm.
do we have to keep
you? You as the commissioner, I suggest you keep it.
Okay.
You're not obligated to, no. If it's a basic, when's the next commission meeting and you respond, it's on Tuesday at 9 a.m., you don't have to keep that, but I don't want you deleting emails that come in only to you.
Yeah.
Okay. Jeff.
All of those
external junk mails that we get, not to suggest that the content is junk, but it's something that you would have gotten as a flyer in the mail that you went out to your mailbox and went and dropped it in your recycling bin, right? That's the example. Informal notifications, communication. So if Allison says we move the meeting to 9:30 or Allison says we're canceling the meeting today, those are communications that don't need to be maintained. Scheduling of appointments and meetings, secondary copies of things, unsolicited additional materials. So if you get that APP email and then somebody starts sending you all of the PDFs for all of the presentations, you don't need to keep those unless you want to. And then personal emails that don't discuss district business. That's the one where the rubber meets the road, okay? And I spend way too much time learning about people's personal lives in ways that I should not learn about people's personal lives. It is extremely important to draw a line between your personal life, your professional life, and for you three, your candidate life, and not let those lines cross. We're going to talk more about that as we go through. Okay, so prevention is the first step. Do I really need to create a public record? Do I really need to take notes, or am I just taking notes to keep my hand busy? I'm sure that's not true of you all, but I've sat in meetings and doodled a lot myself.
Oh, good.
I'm a doodler. Yeah, I draw lots of doodles.
May I?
Yes.
Well, I'm taking notes because, mm-hmm. I mean, taking notes for my questions I'm going to ask,
mm-hmm.
is what I do.
Okay.
I better if I write my questions,
okay.
rather than, I'm going to jump in right now and ask this. Sometimes I do too. But for me, how I learn and
mm-hmm.
how I do is always I write my questions.
Mm-hmm.
So saying that is like.
You don't have to create that record. That's a choice that you're making.
Okay.
It's a perfectly acceptable choice. I do the same thing. I'm a
person that use this and not.
Yeah, I'm a visual person too. I like to see it in
yes.
front of me. My point with that is you don't have to create that record. You're choosing to create it. That's a choice that you can certainly make. That's not a record that has any retention. So you could walk out of the meeting today and drop it in the recycle bin if you want, and that would be acceptable. If you want to keep it so you have it for the next meeting, that's fine as well. But you need to understand the consequence of that choice is that if we get a public records request between now and the next meeting that says, I want all of your meeting notes, I will be coming to you to ask for those, and you'll be required to give them to me.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Be mindful of what you put into the public record. The old adage is, if you don't want to see it on the cover of the newspaper above the fold, you probably shouldn't write it down in a public record.
Yeah.
draw a line between your personal life, your candidate life, and your commission life, and do not cross it. So that means you all were issued district devices. You've been issued district phones, district iPads. Any district business should be occurring on those two devices. You should not be using your personal device for any sort of commission business. You also should not be using a district device for any sort of candidate business. Personal mobile devices. So I want to tell you the law surrounding the use of text messages so you're aware of it. I also want to tease a little bit that this is an internal discussion that we have going on right now here at the district about best practices for text messaging. You three, I'm going to be specific. You should not be using personal devices for text messages related to the district. It's that simple. If you do do that, you're opening up your personal device to a public record search. Not only that, you're opening up the district to liability and risk of liability based on that usage. So my recommendation to you is to not be using your personal devices for district business at all. Okay. The case law says that if text messages are used on the personal device of an elected representative, the case specifically dealt with the Pierce County elected prosecutor, the agency is responsible for asking the employee to do the search and then to get an affidavit of the search documenting that the search was done, what search terms were used, whether or not records were found, and then those records were produced to the agency. It's a path that I would prefer that we not walk down with the three of you in particular.
I have a question regarding this, because for text messages, you don't get to choose who sends them to you.
Right.
So I know for email, if we get an email on our personal or our campaign email, the protocol is to email it to our PUD email and then delete it on a private email.
Correct.
So if we get a text message, hey, Commissioner Logan, I'd like an answer about this. Can we forward that text message to our work text message and then delete that record? Is that what we should do?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, the text messages have the same functionality as an email. You can either forward it as a text message to the text device or to your district cell phone, or you can forward it as an email. The email is preferred. I would encourage you to do that instead of forwarding it as a text to a text.
Oh, I know you could forward a text to
an email. You can forward a text to an email, yes. And it would be easier if you did that because then it's maintained on the district servers.
Sure.
Social media, just a quick primer. District social media sites are archived. We keep track of all of the social media that we do as a district. Your personal social media sites should not be used for district business. Your campaign social media sites should not be used for district business. You should not be commenting on social media in an official capacity. And you need to be extra, 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 extra cautious about keeping that distinction between the district, the personal, and the candidate. There is a case out of Pierce County again. Not sure why all the troublemakers are in Pierce County, but they are. It was out of Puyallup. It was a city council member who had commingled the three, and it created not only extreme headache for agency staff to try and figure out how to deal with that, it also resulted in liability for the city.
So if the PUD has a post block party, so, and does that mean I shouldn't like it on my personal page, or I shouldn't share it on my personal page?
I would actually encourage you not to share it. I would encourage you to not touch your personal stuff. So the problem is the appearance of how it looks. So if I go to your personal page and I see that you've got a bunch of district stuff on there, I wonder what else you're doing in your personal capacity for the district when you shouldn't be. What other actions are you taking? In your case, who are you talking to? Did you talk to one of the other commissioners and make a plan? Because I see you both liked it on your personal pages. So did you talk about that, which creates an open public meetings issue? It's just the opening of Pandora's box. So the best that we can do is to try and just silo those three.
I have a follow-up question.
Yes.
Because what about if I know the PUD was different, interesting, and very intentional, precautions, things like that, mostly when it's snow, things like that. So we have a lot of people that doesn't speak English, speak Spanish. So if I forward that to my Facebook and I put in Spanish the caption, so It's something what I can do?
You can do it.
I mean, it's for communicate.
Yes, but... I want to think through that example more specifically. Mm-hmm. If you don't mind, I would like to think on that a little bit more, and I'll get back to you with a more definitive answer on that particular question.
Yeah, because, well, people, they like to know what we do.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah.
And I feel with this is like tight hands. So it has to be something in the middle, in the equilibrium that we can do as a commissioner. I mean, we have a personal life, but I never try to mix my personal life. I have 5 years training me very hard. Believe me, I know exactly what I can do and what not can do. But I'm a commissioner. So, for example, if I visit the Arlington microgrid, which is something nice. I didn't post anything yet in my social media, but I would like to share with the people. You know, I'm the commissioner. I'm so happy to visit the microgrid in Arlington. Do you know what we do there? Did we do this, this, and this? So that I cannot post either.
So two things in response to that. The first would be I would recommend you to have a commissioner Facebook page and to have that tracked and archived by the district so that we keep track of that. And that would be the preferred way of communicating that information. There is, I'm actually just going to stop there. There is a second question that I would like to discuss in more detail with Colin and then get back to you on that.
Okay. And I think that is in the second question.
Yeah, I think the important point is that, you know, a lot of these are best practices. You know, there's certainly risks that we're trying to identify with using personal devices or personal social media pages that could expose both the district and yourself to requests, and certainly would be respectful of the commission's prerogatives around that. But you need to understand the consequences that we're trying to train and educate on.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can comment on this. I have been involved in two litigations. One of them was huge, and I won't name the contract. But before it was clarified for us, for the board, and that this has been a while ago, I was mixing social media and somewhat to what you're suggesting. And even on my personal computer, I was mixing things. So once you've linked that, and I pulled a lot off of social media because of that, because I had attorneys at my home going through all my personal devices, through all my social media accounts, because I had used them for that. So I'm very, very cautious of doing that.
And piggyback on what Colin has said, and with that example in mind, I don't ever want to do that. I don't want to come to your house, and I don't want to have to sort through social media.
Pretty
intimidating. So yeah, I guess what I was alluding to with that second question, I didn't mean to be so cryptic, is just what Colin was saying, that there is a risk associated with it. And my goal, my hope is that we can all do the best that we can do to minimize potential risk for both you as individual commissioners and the district as a whole.
Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate the question. It certainly brought something to my mind that I hadn't.
Well, communication is crucial. So how we can communicate our constituents what we do, right? I mean, people want to not to do that. I mean,
yeah, I understand. Okay, personal. Nothing is personal on a district device. If it's on a district device, it's the district's. And I will read it. nothing is personal about district business. If it's about the district, it's the district's record. And if the district gets a request for the contents of your computer, smartphone, or iPad, your district owned, it will be turned over with minimal redaction stated.
Okay. I've written down a question on that very thing.
Okay.
Vantage has the feature of making notes, being able to make a note.
Mm-hmm.
Is that then a permanent record? Is that it? I mean, sometimes I can get carried away.
What is Vantage?
Core Vantage is currently the tool
commission
utilizes.
Thank you.
We're currently discussing whether we're going to continue using that tool or not. My understanding as of right now, all of those notes are being retained as part of that system. So your little sticky notes and post-its that are on there.
Okay, now I know that, I think, because now I'm not getting it's colorful.
Because we're required to keep those agendas and those board packets as part of the meetings, and so you're attaching notes that may not be required to be retained, but now they've become part of that packet and that record. So something to think about and going forward, whether we keep using BoardVantage or we migrate to a kind of a new tool for sharing that information.
Right.
Running commentary is currently open for discussion.
But BoardVantage isn't the primary source of the record, right? The record is created elsewhere and put into BoardVantage. So we probably don't have to be retaining them.
Probably not.
And yes.
It's not just me and all my emails that I don't delete. No, it's everything. It's in word of it.
Okay, I'm going to transition into the public records portion. I was asked to keep this an hour, so I'm going to roll through some of it a little quickly. Again, if you have questions, ask them. The Public Records Act was passed in 1972. It's the most popular initiative in Washington state history with good reason. It's important. It was also part of ethics, campaign ethics, and campaign finance reform legislation. So it was a package deal. So it wasn't just the Public Records Act that was so popular. It was all the things that were a part of it. However, it did receive 72% of the popular vote. And that makes sense. People want to know how the government functions, how their tax dollars are being spent, and what you all as elected officials are doing for them. The purpose of the PRA is to prevent the yielding of sovereignty to the agencies that serve the people. We do not give public servants the right to decide what is good for the people to know, what is not good for them to know. And the people insist on remaining informed and keeping control of the government. And those are all codified within the law, those purposes. So our particular responsibilities as district employees, we're obligated to produce all public records unless a specific exemption applies. And even if an exemption applies, we're obligated to gather the record and keep a copy of it. So when we receive a request, a good example is communications that happen in executive session. If there's any documents that are created for the purpose of an executive session, those are going to be exempt from public disclosure. We're not going to turn them over. However, I still have to get a copy of them. Have to mark them, I have to log them, and then I have to retain them for 2 years if there's any records that are connected or documents connected in that scenario or created, excuse me, not connected. Tony, you look very confused.
We don't retain any of that information that's handed out.
Correct. That's not your obligation. No.
Okay.
It's the creator of the record, which presumably would be Colin.
Unless we took notes and kept notes.
Correct.
But I thought that we didn't have to keep them.
You don't. They're notes that you created. You don't have to keep notes. Yes.
But if we do keep them, we have to produce them.
And then I would have to maintain them for an extra 2 years.
Yeah.
Not going to happen.
Okay, good.
You just know, too, that all notes they give us from stuff like that we take, we shred those right away. We don't keep them or
I'll just clarify what the clerk just informed me is that notes that you have produced in the past in executive sessions that have been turned over to the clerk's office have been shredded. They're maintained.
Well, I never take notes because I know, am I aware that it's executive session? If they give you a paper, I mean, I give back the paper that's it. So
wonderful.
Smart,
very smart. Well, it took me 5 years, don't you?
And then we're obligated to provide the fullest assistance to the requester and apply exemptions sparingly. Those terms, fullest assistance and applying exemptions sparingly, are directly from the statute, and they are cited over and over and over again in case law related to public records cases. That fullest assistance language is used as a sword in many situations, which in my personal opinion, is not appropriate. Of course, we're giving our fullest assistance. That's what we do. My goal is never to keep a record from a requester that they should be getting. And I'm an office of one, so I get to decide that, right? Well, you're my, bye, Jeff. Bye, that's fine.
Sure.
Right, I know where you live and where you work, so.
Well, Jeff's certificate, you know.
Yeah.
So intimate. Okay, so the public records requester has obligations that they have to meet. They have to request an identifiable record. It has to be fair notice that they're seeking a public record. They have to be asking for an actual document, not just information. And at a minimum, the request must identify with sufficient clarity to allow me to figure out what the heck they're talking about. And it's not just me. If something comes in that's not clear to me, I ask. Requesters can ask to inspect records or get copies. In the 6 years that I have been here, it'll be 6 years in March, I've never had a requester asked to inspect. They always want copies. We do not charge, just for your information, we don't charge here at the district if it's less than a dollar. So I would say probably 90% of the public records requests that I process, there's no charge to the requester. Directive 37 explains our procedures. Requesters do not have to identify themselves. Sometimes they will want to, because they may be able to receive more information if they tell me who they are. For example, if a requester is requesting their own utility bills and they go through the public records process, if they don't tell me who they are, I have to redact out the address. If they tell me who they are and they are who they say they are, then they will receive those records unredacted.
Thank you. How do you send them that information if they don't tell you who they are?
Email addresses, the majority. I don't deal with the U.S. Postal Service hardly at all. I think I had one in 2024. Everything else was electronic.
But does the law apply to every citizen of the nation?
Yes.
The state of the world?
Yes. We could get requests from anywhere. It's not just a, and that's an interesting question. That was actually litigated a number of years ago because the agency argued that they shouldn't have to fulfill requests for out-of-state requesters. That's not accurate.
Well, I thought of it when I saw that they don't have to identify themselves.
Yeah, don't have to identify themselves, and they don't need to identify the purpose of the request. So I can't go back to them and ask them why they want the records. Sometimes it's useful for them to tell us why they want their records. So there have been occasions, particularly in this job, where I have talked to the subject matter expert within the district and said, hey, would you mind reaching out and calling the person and trying to narrow down or figure out exactly what they're looking for? And sometimes that's useful. They don't have to tell us anything unless they're requesting a list of individuals. If we get a request that says, I want a list of all district employees, or I want a list of all customers, we can't turn that over if they're going to be using it for a commercial purpose. So we get to ask them to sign a statement under penalty of perjury saying that they're not seeking it for commercial purposes.
So we can give a customer's name.
Yes.
And addresses?
No.
Okay.
There's an exemption for addresses. They don't have to limit the number of requests they make. And they don't have to exhaust any internal appeals procedure before they proceed to court if they feel that their rights have been violated under the Public Records Act. Our responsibilities are to gather the records that have been requested or that are potentially responsive to the request, to review them to determine if there's any redactions that need to be made. And then we have to make them available to the requester. And then finally, they have to be retained. I have to keep all public records files for 2 years after I complete a request. So our response is due in 5 days when we receive a public records request. We can respond saying either, hey, we got your request. We're going to need approximately 10 days to gather all responsive records. We can give them the records they've requested. We can provide them an internet address if they're requesting something that we have available on the SNOPED website. We can ask for clarification of the request, or we can deny it because the information is exempt from disclosure. So those are one, we have to do one of those five within 5 days.
Yes, again, I thought we didn't have to create a report, a new report.
We don't have
that
to.
That gathers information from, because sometimes those requests are, I want this dismissed.
We don't have to create reports. However, I will tell you that sometimes we make an administrative decision to create a report because it's easier for us.
Okay.
Because we still have to give the information. So if somebody requested information that was across 6 or 7 spreadsheets and we just needed one column from each spreadsheet, it would be easier to just have the department create an individual record giving them what they asked for. Your individual responsibilities, you as a commissioner are responsible for understanding how to manage your electronic records, understand how to manage your paper records, I understand that you need to keep things in their native format if they're being kept, and you're responsible for providing public records to the clerk when requested. So when we receive a public records request that implicates your records, I go to Allison to help facilitate getting those records from you. But that does not mean that you all can't come to me with a question or a concern at any time. Feel free to email me. What to do if you receive a request. So if you're walking out of the meeting one day and somebody walks up to you and hands you a piece of paper that says, here's my public records request, here's what you need to do. You need to get it to Allison or to me, and that's my email address up there. If you're not sure if it's a public records request or not, go ahead and play it safe and give it to Allison or me, and we'll make that determination. Remember, we have to respond within 5 days, so you need to do it quickly. And every day a request remains unanswered after those 5 business days is a violation of the law. And as I've said a couple of times, it's a strict liability statute, which means we pay a penalty if we violate it, period. There's no damages required.
And it doesn't matter how we receive the request, whether it comes to a PUD email, a personal email, anything, right?
It does not.
Yeah.
It does not. It needs to get to me.
Yeah.
I hesitated just because it's a defense. If we get sued for it, to say they didn't submit it in the way that our directive requires them to submit it, but we still have to respond to it.
But it's a response acknowledging receipt, because sometimes it can take a lot of time to pull together that information.
Yes, but
does that have to be done in 5 days?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
What happened if you were respond in 5 days?
Then we have violated the statute, and we're subject to a penalty of up to $100 per day per page that we didn't provide the records.
Okay.
Just to clarify Commissioner Olson's question, we have to acknowledge receipt within the 5 days, not respond to the totality of the request.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sometimes it can take a few.
Sarah
months.
Will give an estimation of time that will take.
Oh,
we
okay.
complete the
All
request.
Right.
We do request responses in batches sometimes to make sure that there's
okay.
a progression.
But I will say that I do my darndest to get them done within the 5 days, because we are obligated as a district to provide a report to the legislature annually that tells them how we've complied with the law and what our numbers are. And so I feel a lot better as a human being if I could say, you know, 96% of ours were responded to within 5 days. Okay. So when Allison tells you we've received a public records request and it implicates your records, you are obligated to search thoroughly and promptly for any records you might have, to search in all locations where records are reasonably likely to be located.
Personal devices as well.
Yes, if you have stuff on your personal, which you should not.
Well, Tony does.
Oh, well, good. Thank
she
you.
Her lesson.
Good job. if you can't complete your search for records right away, that's okay, but you need to notify Allison how long it's going to take you to do it, so she can tell me and I can tell the requester. Keep in mind that an electronic search might not be sufficient. A physical search may be needed if you keep paper records. So if you keep your notes, you'll have to look through them. Consequences if we violate the Public Records Act, we can be sued for one of 3 causes of action. Either we do not respond in a timely manner, meaning that 5 days we have to respond. And then when we set an estimate of how long it's going to take to respond, if I have to either extend that out, don't meet that, we can be sued for that, for not making a reasonable estimate of time. Fail to produce responsive records, so we just don't give something, or a failure to properly apply an exemption. So if I redact out something that I shouldn't have redacted. A court imposes civil penalties. There's no damages required. So normally in civil litigation, you have to prove that you were damaged in some way to figure out how much money you should get paid. That's not true in Public Records Act cases. There doesn't have to be any damage. The damage is you didn't get the record that you requested. And the penalties are up to $100 per day per page for records withheld. I will tell you, I have been doing this area of law for 20 years. I have settled cases for $1.2 million for a records violation, $675,000 for a public records violation. It's not beyond the realm of possibility if mistakes are made. A court has to consider a specific set of factors when determining the penalty amount. And one of those factors is your individual management of your records. So if you're not managing your records properly, that can increase our penalty if a mistake is made. In addition, the court has to provide attorney's fees and costs. It's not optional. And I will tell you that there are attorneys in the state of Washington who realize this and who pursue cases. There's no disincentive for pursuing a case. Either you got the record if you didn't, and if your client didn't get the record, heck yeah, you're gonna sue and you're gonna get your fees paid for completely by the agency. And that, I will tell you, on the case that I settled for $675,000, $450,000 of it was attorney's fees. Yeah, we're troublemakers. Especially Colin. Why should you care? Maintenance of public records is every district employee's responsibility. Almost everything you do creates a public record that has to be dealt with in some way. That's why we have a whole department dedicated to governing the information that we create and maintain as a district. Our insurance fund does not pay for public records penalties. So if we lose in court on a public records case, that comes from the operating budget of the district. It does not come from our insurance fund. And most importantly, our customers place their trust in us. And even if it was a simple mistake, even if Sarah DiVittorio redacted something she shouldn't have redacted and we ended up paying money out for that, it doesn't look good. It looks like we were trying to hide information, even if I wasn't, right? Even if it was just a mistake. And I am amazing, but I am only one person. So I do the very best that I can to keep us protected and insulated and do this job correctly, but I'm only one person. So I need the help of every employee to manage their records and be on top of their records and to respond to me when I ask.
One of the things you didn't mention, and when an agency receives a request for information that goes back 30 years, is there any opportunity to negotiate with the requester, or are we just flat obligated to do our best to pull all that information?
So a couple responses to that. First of all, yes, I can call the requester and say, hey, you've asked for 30 years of information. Is there something particular you're looking for? Can I help you find it? Certainly that avenue is always open. However, if I have a requester who does not want to provide any clarification and wants their 30 years worth of records, the other piece that we have that provides us some comfort is that we have records retention requirements. There are very few records at the district that we should be having for 30 years.
Well, that was just an example.
I know, but
very exhaustive request.
Right, but if it's a very exhaustive request, I can ask the requester to narrow it or to provide clarification, but they are under no obligation to do so. And then the requirement is that I just got to work my hardest to get everything.
Are most of the documents that you're dealing with now electronic?
Yes.
We're very fortunate.
We are very fortunate. Majority, and I will credit DIG for that. The District Information Governance Group has done an excellent job of getting us into the electronic age to get our systems created and maintained and purchased that do the right amount of retention for us so that we're not keeping things we don't need to be keeping, but that also help us and help me by providing really good search capabilities so I can find the stuff that we're looking for. So DIG has done an excellent job in moving the district forward on that front.
Yeah.
Before we switch over to OPMA, just to further kind of tout Sarah and the work that she does, I give a quarterly report to the ELT that talks about the number of records requests that we're seeing. So in 2022, we saw 256 requests at a cost of $1.5 million to respond to, 284 in 2023, then over 350 requests in 2024. So this is just kind of the scope. And within those individual requests, we're talking tens of thousands of records that get reviewed by Sarah, emails that need to be reviewed for privilege and potential redaction, responsiveness. I mean, it is a tedious job that she does incredibly well on behalf of the district.
I am a public records nerd. I'm the hype woman for public records. I love this job.
Well,
makes me odd that I
learned a lot of new stuff.
Well, good. See? And you were the one at the beginning. It was like, were you in this training again?
No, thank you very much.
Well, I'm really happy to see that you have the passion to do that.
I
mean, all those paperwork. I mean, seriously, I mean, Thank you. Because you need to have passion. Otherwise, it's like,
yes,
I'm going to do this.
Yeah. Well, and that, you know, from my perspective in doing this so long, that's the agencies that run into trouble is when they don't place an importance on this work and they delegate and delegate and delegate it to the person that can't delegate it to anybody else. And that person doesn't want to do it, doesn't care about it, or doesn't have the time to do it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm fortunate here that this has been made a full-time job for me. And that's great. I love it.
Well, it also puts the district in a great light. Public wants the record. Easily get it from you. That's huge. You know, having worked for a school district where most records were paper,
mm-hmm.
records requests were borderline terrifying.
Yeah.
Knowing that we had to produce all the records on a certain item.
Yeah.
Really, it's just.
Yeah, I will tell you that that was.
Request, that's just a. And there's a lot of gotchas out there. They're literally, there's. And people that have done that just as a source of revenue.
Yeah, when I came over here from the county, one of the ways that Ann, who was the previous senior, what is your title again?
Chief
Legal Officer. Colin's predecessor, when she asked me to come over to do this job, one of the most attractive things to me was that there is, that DIG exists.
Yeah.
I've never been in an agency that had an entire department that was dedicated to managing the records and the information. It's just, it's phenomenal. I appreciate that this organization has put such an emphasis on that. All right, we'll transition into the OPMA. This is the shortest part of the presentation. So our meetings are open and public. All meetings of the governing body of a public agency shall be public and all persons permitted to attend. And then we have specific guidelines for how meetings are to occur and what contacts you all are to be having with each other, both within the meetings and outside of the meetings. The basic requirements, you'll see that there's a statutory citation. The OPMA is one of the most clear, concise acts that we have in the law, which is awesome. Because it makes this a lot easier. So basic requirements, all meetings are required to be open in public. Public comment must be allowed prior to or at all regular meetings. A quorum has to be here. A meeting occurs when a majority of the body is in attendance and action is taken. We're gonna talk in great detail about that in a couple minutes. All persons are permitted to attend the meetings with no preconditions. No voting by a secret ballot, and public notice requirements are in place for both regular and special meetings. Meeting agendas must be available online no later than 24 hours in advance of the meeting. Adjournments and continuances must comply with particular notice requirements under the OPMA. Any action or vote taken in violation of the OPMA shall be null and void. Potential personal liability for knowingly taking actions in violation of the OPMA, and you must receive training. So now we're going to get into the nitty-gritty. So the definition of a public agency, the long and short of it is we're a public agency. That's really all you need to worry about. The governing body is you three. So a meeting occurs when an action is taking. So what's an action? It's the transaction of the official business by you three, including but not limited to receipt of public testimony, deliberations, discussions, considerations, reviews, evaluations, and final action. So what we're doing here, action has been taken. Final action means a collective positive or negative decision or an actual vote by a majority of the members of a governing body. You did that twice this morning, right? So what constitutes a meeting? Under the OPMA, a meeting occurs when there is an action, which includes not only a final official vote, but also discussion, deliberation, or evaluation. So even if you hadn't taken two votes this morning, this still would have been a meeting. But this can also include study sessions, retreats, conference calls, email exchanges, and text messages. So the big catch here is the quorum. And you guys have a particularly difficult position because there are only three of you. So anytime there's a communication between two of you, you could potentially be having a meeting. So I caution you to be extremely careful with that. More than anything though, I discourage you from having conversations related to anything district related outside of this forum. And what I mean by that is sending, you know, Commissioner Logan, sending Commissioner Olson an email that says, are you going to be at the block party? You should not be having those communications. And again, this is not so much that that would constitute a meeting. It would not, but it's the appearance, right? We don't want to ever create an appearance that you all are engaging in backdoor communications about district business.
You know, I actually think it's more straightforward for us. You say it's a challenge.
Oh,
I think it's more straightforward. Because it's only three, it's just easy. We just don't.
Okay.
Other organizations, I think serial meetings probably tend to happen more because
more people.
If you're on a seven-member board, you talk to one person, and that person talks to another person about their idea, and you, pretty soon you've essentially, in a way, communicated with multiple people.
Yeah.
So I just think it's...
I think then the greater risk of business being done, you know, decisions being made, and then brought to the dais, being made on the public side.
Yeah.
So...
I'd be interested in your perspective, having come from...
Well,
I'm sorry.
I like transparency all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have to do that. But, for example, in the city council, we are seven.
Mm-hmm.
So we were allowed to talk with three, I mean, total.
Mm-hmm.
Because four is...
Right, the
quorum.
Mm-hmm.
But they give us also the opportunity to know each other.
Yeah.
As a whole. And on one hand, here is difficult because we are three. And yet, on another hand, I would like to know different side of the PUD. I would like to know my colleagues, you know? I mean, because we are sitting here and I would like to know as a humans, like, what we like. I mean, hey, Tony, do you have grandchildren or something
mm-hmm.
like that? I have no idea, and I sit in here and working with them for 6 years on, and it's like, I know the perspective is everything, but how we can have those conversations besides that? I mean, come on. I mean, I would like to come and say, hey, how was your weekend, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, but it feels for me awkward to do that because
mm-hmm.
I'm a very, like, approachable person day. I like to talk. I think there are more important things too besides the PUD business.
Yeah.
And I know that we care about perspective, but yet, on another hand, I a lot to talk besides that.
Yeah. And I guess that's why I would say it's more awkward because I tend to be like that too. It would make me very, like, I would like to, if I were you, I would like to go out to lunch or something after this, but you can't go out to a restaurant in this town. And
if it's noticed, if it's part of our.
Right.
And that has happened in the past.
Yeah.
Where the commissioners and members of the executive leadership team
mm-hmm.
or John have, you know, had quarterly lunches or quarterly dinners.
Right. You would
just that hasn't happened in a long time, but we've done that on a more personal level.
Yeah, it feels like to me like more robot mute.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, coming only the meeting, that's it. I cannot approach anybody else. Okay, bye. I'm done with business. But
well, you know, old Tony, you get me talking and I'm going to be talking business in 50 seconds. So that's where, you know, I have to really, really.
Yeah. My brain, maybe because I'm bilingual and my both hemispheres is like, I can barely like know what thin line I cannot cross and I understand perfectly. And yet I can, after the meeting, I can bend and approach you guys and talk about the weather,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, pickable or whatever. I have no idea, but it's
well, we're all lovely. You can talk to us.
I was going to say, we can take it
out.
Anyways, but it doesn't feel good sitting with my colleagues.
I agree and I understand. And I first got on, it felt very awkward, very strange.
Yeah.
And now I just sort of take more. I think we have richer conversations as a group. I think when the public watches, which we don't watch much, but I think when we make a decision, they know what we're thinking. Because sometimes you'll see an elected body just approve something, and you don't really know. It just sort of seems like, wow, there's no discussion, or was there a discussion at some point? So I think we've had some, they're not always easy conversations. We've had some awkward conversations, but... Maybe led by me, I don't know. Anyway.
Well, that's what means that I
tough transition.
I'm not agree, but which I try to say is difficult. You know, we're humans. That's all.
Well, I appreciate this conversation in response to this slide.
Yeah, I'll just say, you know, certainly a topic we can talk about at our governance training. I mean, it's, again, your prerogative as a commission, how you want to interact with each other. And we can work on creating those opportunities to be able to have communications, knowing that perception matters. And we want to be sensitive to that. But also understanding that you are human. There'll be opportunities, whether you're traveling to our industry functions with PPC, or we want to schedule some formal lunches for briefings that we can notice up as special meetings. We just want to be sensitive to it. Again, that's the purpose of this training.
Yeah.
Okay, so executive sessions. Again, very specific rules within the statute. Common reasons for executive sessions: purchase and sale of land, legal issues, personnel issues. No final action and no voting can occur in an executive session. Minutes are not required to be taken. Notes are not required to be taken. We have to cite to the purpose and the specific subsection and briefly describe the reason within the context of the open public meeting. We have to announce a time and abide by it. And if there's going to be any deviation from that time and extension of that time, then we need to come back and notify the open public meeting that we're continuing the executive session for a longer time. You cannot come back early. If you've said you're going to be gone 40 minutes in an executive session, you have to be, unless you come back and announce it. Your attorney must be present for discussions regarding litigation or anticipated litigation. Penalties for OPMA violations. The actions are null and void. So if there was a violation and an action took place, it no longer exists. There is personal liability. This was raised in the last 5 years. So if you attend a meeting where action is taken in violation of the OPMA with knowledge of the violations, you're subject to personal liability. The first time it's $500, the second time it's $1,000, third time it's $1,000. In addition to that, there can be agency liability. So if there is an OPMA violation case filed against the district, we would have to pay attorney's fees and costs in addition to the penalty. And most importantly is the loss of public trust. As Colin said, perception really is everything.
There's violations, but there's also if the instance triggers a need for an investigation, that really is tough to go through. I'll tell you.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing.
Yeah. Are there any final questions? Hey, I did it in 1 hour and 3 minutes.
Great job. Great work.
And this is great. I'm going to get this.
That's quite a transition.
And to clarify, all of it, everyone kind of left, many of them are required to take this training as well, aren't they?
Yes, the training, well, not by law. Only elected officials and public records officers are required to take the training by law. But we do have mandatory training here at the district for all employees on records management and the Public Records Act. It's just online through Learning Central. And then I routinely go to department meetings and present at staff meetings. I'm scheduled to go to one on Friday. So, and my contact information is there. You can always feel free to reach out, or Colin can write me on to me if you reach out to him. All right. Thank you.
Any questions for Sarah?
No, I only want to say thank you.
Oh, no.
Come on. This is your time.
You're very welcome.
Thank you very much.
Sarah.
Good job, Sarah.
Anything else this morning, John? Well, give me your report. Thank you.
Yeah, just a couple items I was going to share with the board. One, our education program partnered with DNE to provide a field trip opportunity to a class from the Edmonds Special Education Work Experience Program. Students learned about different jobs in the operations division of the PD, FTC, the PD line vehicles and the equipment and a safety demonstration on the high voltage trailer. The great collaboration between divisions and an excellent opportunity for these students to learn about electrical safety and careers in the utility field. The only other item I was going to share is I spent this past weekend and yesterday in Puerto Rico at the large public power council meeting, and a couple different kind of interesting things. I assume, or I believe most of you are aware, the challenges that Puerto Rico has had going back to 2017, significant storm again in 2019, and then as recent as New Year's Eve, where the entire island was out of power. I teed up the conversation with my Uber driver from the airport to the hotel just about, you know, how you feeling about electric service. And he was really chatty until that. He kind of got quiet. He said, "What, do you work in that industry?" I said, "Yeah, we're here for a meeting." And he said, "Well, the lights are out all the time. Power is terrible." He said, "You know what bothers me even more is how much it costs." He called his wife and had his wife send me his bill, or their bill. And it's just the two of them. They have no, you know, central air conditioning or air conditioning load on the house. And their monthly bill is $486. Oh. I actually saw the bill, and I was, there was no carryover. He paid his bill last month. And the price base per kilowatt hour price is like 24.5 cents. Then there's a fixed charge is relatively high. And then also they have an additional usage charge if they go above a certain amount of kilowatt hours. And it's, you know, they said it's not only we don't have power that often, it's horribly expensive.
So how big is their customer base though?
They have about 1.7 million customers.
Oh, they do?
Yeah. They would be considered or are considered either the largest public power or second behind LED and Los Angeles. Yeah. But the challenges are just enormous. And they've restructured a number of times over the last few years. They have two different groups that or organizations that work under PREPA, which is the kind of the holding or the government agency that operates the utility. You have an organization that runs the T&D and then an organization that runs the generation. Mm-hmm. It's just, they actually just recently restructured that and taken a lot of it from LIPA, Long Island Power, which is basically an operating company, and they contract out all the different services. But yeah, it really made me thankful again for you know, the reliability that we have, and then the cost or the affordability of the power that we have.
The gift of low cost.
And they don't, there's no opportunity for infusion of a lot of money to upgrade that system.
Oh, yeah, they talk about how much money, and much of it coming from the storm. They still have circuits and systems that are out from, you know, 5-6 years ago. And they're trying to rebuild and you know, create more resiliency with steel poles or steel towers and things like that. It's hard to get work. There's a lot of fleecing going on. I mean, contractors that are extorting the, so really difficult situation. One other thing I was just going to mention, Jim Robb, CEO for NERC, came to speak to the CEOs and gave an update on all the things going on around FERC and NERC. And of course, from a FERC perspective, there's, you know, that's, some of that is caught up in the administration change and things that are going on, new folks at DOE and Office of Electricity. And then lastly, we do a CEO roundtable discussion. And this discussion focused on emergency response. Each of the utilities, either the 27, 28 largest public utilities in the country, and at least half have had significant, I mean, we heard of the recent fires in the Los Angeles area, significant storms. And I spoke about our bomb cyclone in November, and I focused more on, not on the operational and the restoration effort specifically, but more on the communication process, the upgrades that we had done to the outage map and how we were communicating ETRs, reaching out to stakeholders. We had some of our crews and staff, you know, interviewed by Seattle News Channel. And it was interesting because after I, you know, kind of gave my spiel and really bragged about our team, the CEO for Seattle City Light, Don Lindell, and then Jackie Flowers, who's the CEO for Tacoma Public Utilities, both said they were very jealous. They noticed the kind of the goodwill and favor that all the media outlets in the area had given us, beating the tar out of PSE, but really given us, and that was a 6.5 day storm. And that's, that is really, again, it's just huge kudos to our teams to go through a 6.5 day storm and come out the other end with really, really positive overall customer and community.
Our teams are open. I don't have anything to say.
They are. We're very loud.
Well, it's phenomenal. We've raised the bar, and we just have to keep that bar, but it's enormous.
It really is. And many of the other utilities shared that when you don't, and again, I think we talked about this, but you win and lose the storm restoration, not on how quickly we restore customers. We want to do that as safely and as quickly as possible, but it's really in the media. It's really with our customers, with our local officials, our key stakeholders. That's where you generate the goodwill. And the fallout from utilities, not just public power, but you look across the country, IOUs who do not do that well, and it's catastrophic from the ongoing pain and suffering of, money that they have to spend and to try to rebuild their reputation. It's costly, and now you've got to rebuild that trust with your customers.
Well, IOUs have a different incentive. I don't want to do that.
Well, if you can talk,
I don't have anything important
really
to say. I don't have anything.
I
want to say thank you for sharing this. Sometimes we take for granted everything, and I'm very grateful when being here with electricity and everything. I come from rural area in Mexico, and when you mentioned about the Puerto Rico, how expensive and everything they impact by the hurricanes. In Acapulco, we are so sad because still people in the mountains in Guerrero State, and Acapulco was impacted by two hurricanes year after year. One that was the Otis, and last year was the John, and they don't recover as well, 100%. And that was a lot of damage they caused. And they are mountains of Guerrero, which is the indigenous, the majority they live. It's a luxury to have electricity. So in my town also, I mean, we are very privileged versus the mountains of Guerrero. But people over there, they have already candles prepared because it's how we did. And you have to suck it up. If it's hot, to swallow, as how we live over there. So I'm very grateful they acknowledge that. And sometimes we take for granted that we have to have electricity or air condition or something. So thank you.
Yeah, well said.
John, I have a question. It's off subject, but since you just attended a conference, a group of utility leaders, the sort of breaking news recently about AI and how this Chinese company has done it for a fraction of the cost. I've also read that they did it with a fraction of the energy needed. And we're so focused in the region and nation about data centers and how we're going to supply power. Is there any conversation or about, is that really going to come to fruition? Or
lots of conversation at each of the lunch and dinner tables around that. In fact, I had a meeting before this with the NERC folks in preparation of meetings next week. And one of the panels is to talk about the large loads in the AI. And we don't have a lot of information on this DeepSeek thing, which is a Chinese. But there is, it's just a lot of unknown. And especially around the energy consumption in which their AI operates. It's just learning. A lot more info to come.
Any other questions for John?
No, I want to say thank you for bringing that question because it's a lot.
It's going to be fascinating.
Yeah, it's top of mind for a lot of folks.
Are we going to build nuclear plants, buy nuclear plants, restart nuclear plants? Feels like they don't have enough energy, but then all of a sudden, maybe you do.
Well, and that That was one of the other guest speakers over the weekend was, I forget the gentleman's name, but from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and you know, trying to do something about the time it takes to get the SMRs, you know, kind of in place, and even, you know, the old, it was really fascinating, actually, why it's so hard to get, how long it takes to get even the older technology for nuclear in place,
yeah,
and the cost burden. And yeah, someday maybe I'll have an opportunity to give you a little more background. It's just fascinating how that all developed and that culture that still exists that really has very little to do with mitigating the actual safety of those plants. Fascinating, but yeah.
Okay, anything else for this morning?
No, that's it.
Okay. It is now 11:21 a.m. and the board will recess into executive session to discuss current or potential litigation. As anticipated, the executive session will last approximately 30 minutes. We'll take a short break before we start, and we'll conclude at 11:55. The board will then hold a second executive session to discuss the performance of our public employees, and anticipated the executive session will last approximately 60 minutes and will conclude at 12:35. The commission is not expected to take further action following either executive session, and will adjourn the regular meeting upon concluding.
Commissioner Logan, it's 12:55, not second one.
Okay. Right. It's that because I wrote down the first one wrong.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay. It is now 12:55 p.m. The executive session will be extended for approximately 20 more minutes and conclude at 1:15. It is now 1:15 p.m. and the regular meeting is now adjourned.